What is up, and welcome back to another episode of the Wizards Podcast. I'm your host, Greg Finberg, and today's episode, we're going to talk about a couple things. As you see, I'm very good with technology now. I'm starting to figure this stuff out. There's an overlay on the screen now. I have an agenda on the bottom right of the screen. If I did this right, you should be able to see the five things that we're going to talk about. I think it'll be cool to have it up now that I have YouTube as another place to post the pod. So for those of you listening, if you can't see, in the bottom right of the screen, is five things that we're going to talk about. We're going to dive into reporting that suggests that Brooklyn prefers to trade up in hopes of landing Jeremiah Fears and how that could affect the Wizards. And off of that, talking about how some people are saying the Wizards have too many guards and shouldn't take someone like Trey Johnson or Jeremiah Fears. I want to dispel that and kind of give my thoughts on why the Wizards should always go with BPA over fit number six, especially at this stage in the rebuild. There's also reporting out of Phoenix suggesting that they really don't want Beal to return. And I know that he's not on the Wizards anymore, but he'll always still be linked and attached to them. So I want to talk about that because I think that's important and fun to talk about. And then also want to talk about some trade outlooks and some storylines with the offseason. You got Corey Kispert. You got guys like Chris Middleton and Marcus Smart that are going to have their names, you know, near the trade block at some point. So want to talk about that, offer up some maybe mock trades and give you an outlook of realistic expectations, because those are some questions that I've been frequently asked over the past couple of weeks. And honestly, since the Wizards acquired both of those players at the deadline. So without further ado, I want to get into the first thing on the agenda today, which is the report suggesting that the Brooklyn Nets are looking to trade up somewhere to get Jeremiah Fears. And the reporting was not that they want to trade up with Washington specifically to get the sixth pick. But at the same time, it's going to be tricky for them to trade up to, number three with Philadelphia. Because again, I don't think if they want Fears, they have to give up that many assets to move up that far. I think he'll still be there past that point. Then you got Charlotte at four. I think they'll probably take Bailey or Edgecombe, whoever they prefer there, whoever falls to them. You got Utah sitting at five that could be a trade partner. But at the same time, their GM just came out and said, we're not tanking next year. So I think they want a difference maker at five, especially if someone that they covet in that range, like a Bailey or Edgecombe, falls to five and they can select them there. So I just don't foresee it. But then you get Washington. It's a unique situation, right, where Brooklyn has four first-round picks. They have a bunch of future draft picks and assets that they could compile together to make a trade up for the sixth pick. Now, Brooklyn sat at eight, and that's important. Because it just would be a two-place jump. Number eight would definitely have to be included, I think, in any type of trade for the sixth pick, right? So Washington would move back two spots. And that's kind of the framework you're working with right there. And then you kind of start to negotiate, if you're Washington, okay, well Brooklyn, what are you going to give me, right? What are you going to do to entice me that, you know, maybe we're not as high on Fears and we're thinking about moving back? You guys can come up and take them and jump New Orleans, who's at seven and could easily go to take him. I mean, Murray blew out his ACL, and they could trade McCollum. They're in a weird situation. Maybe they covet Fears, and Brooklyn knows they have to jump him. Washington, if they don't want Fears, is an interesting situation, right? They could acquire another first-round pick to just move back two spots, and they could still get one of the players that they want at number eight. And I think for a rebuilding team, it's a two-way street, because I understand the camp that sat there saying, look, yeah, you can get another first round pick and that would be, you know, three first round picks this year, but you have so many young players already. It's already going to be tough to find minutes for a guy like AJ Johnson or for guys like Colby Jones in the back end of that rotation. Do you really need to add more, or do you just want to get talent, top end talent, instead of adding on another player in the late first round? And I completely get that camp, and I'm slowly creeping into that camp as we speak. But then there's also the camp where you want as many darts to throw at the board as possible, because you never know when you're going to hit a bullseye. And I think that's the other side of it, where, yeah, I understand you could trade back, but you could trade back, right, and still get Derek Queen if you want him. You could still get Yegor Demon or Kaman Malawak or Konka Nipple. One of those guys will be there at eight, realistically. And so you could still trade back, get those guys, and pick up another pick like 19. The trade that I think I would accept is 8 and 19 for 6. I think if that's offered to me, and again, that's only if the top five goes as expected, which is Flag, Harper, and then any combination of Bailey, Edgecombe, and Johnson. And I'm sat at 6 on the Wizards. Fears is there. I don't know if I necessarily want him. And I think I can get my guy a little bit later on. I would make that trade. But again, if one of the guys that I named that I think will go in the top five is there, I'm taking that talent. I think those are my top end talents. And if they're all gone and it's just Fears there, maybe the top or near the top of my board, I'm content moving back if it's worth it for me. And I think picking up another pick, and that way you have 18 and 19, or you could have 6 and 18. I weigh the 19th pick that much more, right? And here's my thing. If I'm Washington, right, and I trade back and I have 18 and 19, and I see a team in the middle of that lottery at around the 11 to 14 mark, and somebody that I want falls, I'm totally fine packaging 19 and 40 or 18 and 40 and moving up to get that guy. And you still have the other pick. I would even trade 18 and 19. You could go up to as high as 11 or 12. Like, you're just giving yourself more assets. So again, if I'm Washington and any of my top five prospects are there at six, I am not trading back. I'm taking talent because I think this team needs talent. They need a possible star. And I think there's a possible star in that range. But if I can move back just two spots, still be able to get my guy and pick up another top 20 pick in a deep draft class, I'm doing that. So again, I think there's merit to these rumors. I've seen multiple reports indicating Brooklyn wants to move up, indicating that they're linked to Fears and they really like him as a lead guard. And if they like him that bad, 8 and 19 is enough for me. 8 and 27, 8 and 26, either of those don't move the needle. I don't need another late first-round pick to add. I need another top 20 pick. So if Brooklyn wants to move up and I'm Washington, I'm Will Dawkins, I'm the GM, I need 19. That's kind of where I'm coming from in this situation. Again, in the comments, you could let me know below if 8 and 19 is worth it for you to move up, or to move back from 6, or if you're sat there and you say, I'm going to be greedy, give me 26 or 27 as well, or give me a couple future seconds. But I will note, right, that Washington, in order to move up to get Bilal Coulibaly 2 years ago from 8 to 7, gave up 2 second-round picks. Again, it's a one slot over two slot move up, but it's a pretty similar range, right? And I think that that's important to note. If you're Washington, and obviously they gave up 8 as well. Like that, they moved up one spot, gave up their pick, and they gave up 2 future seconds. But again, Brooklyn, it's a 2-spot jump. You really want this guy. Again, I would need 19 realistically. 26 doesn't really do it for me. Obviously, 27 doesn't. So if that's me personally, I'm curious to know what you guys think in the comments as well. But that's kind of the first thing that I want to talk about is the reporting out of Brooklyn. The second thing that kind of links to this is the best player available over fit debate. I've seen it all across Twitter. And it really stems from certain players, I feel. Like, you got your Malawak supporters that are saying, okay, the fit isn't that great at this spot, but you can't teach that size. You can't teach 7'2" with a 7'6" wingspan. That's unteachable. That fit with Sar, it could work, it couldn't work, but I'm taking that size all day. And I get that. And then there's the part of Wizards draft Twitter that says, well, Derek Queen is a perfect front court fit to plug in at the 4 alongside Sar. What Sar lacks, Queen has, and vice versa. And that's the fit camp. I am not in the fit camp. I'm typically in the best player available. And if you listen to my previous pods, you would know that I will deviate at times. Like, I do understand that it can't always just be best player available. If there's one or two players and the fit is way better on one than the other, I'm probably taking the one that fits better. If it's not too different, if they're not different tiers in my board. Like I mentioned, Malawak's a perfect example, right? Like, Malawak, Queen, I have 8, 9. Like, there's not too much separating them, and I'd be a little bit indifferent. But the fact that Queen is a pretty much plug and play there at the 4, I have him over, but even if I had him at 9, I'd consider taking him there just because it's not too different for me in 8, 9. I don't want to get too involved in like the numbers of my board personally. But I think that the Malawak pairing with a guy like Sar, who you just drafted at 2, you don't obviously plan your future without a guy like that. I'm not going to draft someone that I don't think could play with them, especially as high as 6. Like, I'm drafting someone that I want to be in my starting lineup, that I want to play big minutes when this team's competing at 6. And that's why I would take a guy like Queen over Malawak. That's why I'd consider even Demon, who's 10 on my board versus 9 in Malawak, and I'd consider Demon over him just because I think the fit with Malawak and Sar is very murky at best in the front court, and I'd rather go with a guy like Demon that I think fits better because I don't have that much separation between the prospects. That's kind of the bait, and I understand both sides of it, right? It could definitely deviate, like I mentioned. But here's what I'd offer on that spot, right? I think a lot of Wizards draft Twitter is basically saying, why would we draft another guard? We have Jordan Poole. We have Bub Carrington. We just took 14th. We just traded for AJ Johnson, who could be good. Bilal Coulibaly is a wing, but maybe plays guard. I don't know. If we don't even include him, you got Jaylen Martin. You got Colby Jones, who's only 22, just turned 23, actually. You still have Marcus Smart, who's not here for the future, but will get minutes next year. And you have all of these guards. And their point, that perspective, is that the Wizards have the guards. They don't need another one. There's really not many minutes to go around for me, maybe even a guy like AJ Johnson. He might not play a lot this season. Same with Colby Jones. And they sit there and say, well, don't draft a guard because I want AJ Johnson and Colby Jones to play. I want them to develop. I want Bub Carrington to get big minutes still at guard. We still think Jordan Poole could be a point guard of the future. Like, I understand that, right? But here's my point. When we really break this down, and I took some time to break it down, the Wizards' guards that I could be here for the future are Bub Carrington and AJ Johnson. Like, Jordan Poole possibly, but he's, what, 25, 26? Like, I think he could be here for the future, but I wouldn't be surprised if he was traded tomorrow. Like, I'm pretty indifferent there. But at the same time, even if you count Jordan Poole, that's three guards. Like, you talk about Jaylen Martin, Colby Jones, Marcus Smart. I don't see them as staples of the future. I don't even see Jordan Poole as a staple of the future. And yet, AJ Johnson, for me, like, he showed flashes. He's really young, but he's really raw, and he could possibly just not develop into the player that Wizards fans hope he could be. And so when I'm looking at it, I got Bub Carrington there. That's kind of my staple there at guard. He could play the one or the two. I don't know. But for those reasons, right, I think you can see that even if you're in the draft for fit situation, I think Washington realistically has hammered home one guard for the future. Like, a lockdown Bub Carrington could be. Not, and he's not that guy yet, but I think they value him like that. So that is why I'm not in that camp. You also look at forwards in the rotation for, or I should say wings, right? You got Bilal Coulibaly, you got Keyshawn George, and those are your realistic staples and building blocks at the wing. You got a lot of other solid players, right, on this roster, but they're not staples. They're not your I'm not moving off from this guy. We drafted him. We want to see him develop. You could even throw Justin Champagne in there, and that's three forwards to three guards if you're counting Poole, Bub, and AJ. Like, it's very similar, as you can see, and that's my point. That's why you take best player available, because when you break it down and you look at who I think could be here for the future, those six guys are who I think could possibly be here for the next 2, 3, 4 years. And it's murky even with a guy like Poole, but that's why I go best player available. The perfect example, and I've said this before, is Cleveland. They took Colin Sexton top five, and the next year took Darius Garland top five. They just took a point guard, and you're sat there scratching your head saying, why are they taking another one? But he was the best player, and they said, you know what? We'll try to make it work, and if we can't, we'll deal one. And they traded Sexton in that move to get Donovan Mitchell, and Darius Garland is one of the best point guards in the league. He's an all-star. So that's my point. Like, it doesn't always work out that way as well, but that's a great example of, just because you have a guard doesn't mean you don't draft another guard if they're your clear best player available. Like, if Trey Johnson is there at six, I'm taking Trey Johnson. I'm not taking a Yegor Demon or a Kaman Malawak because I don't have center depth on this team and I want Malawak. No, you take the best player. The Wizards are nowhere close to getting these plug-and-play, filling-in-holes guy. We have way too many holes to start plugging them. You know, you have to figure out the solution. You have to find, like, a true star, and you got to do all of these other steps before you start plugging stuff in. They're not at OKC levels of the rebuild yet. They're at the early stages. And I think it's going well, but I don't think they're at any point or any position to really pick and choose who they want in terms of their position or how they can play alongside other guys. I think that's a good merit and a good thing to use when you're deciding between two players you have that are similar, like I mentioned with Queen and Malawak on my board. Fit is a fine determinant of, okay, I like these two guys pretty equally, but this guy fits way better. That's fine. But if one guy's a lot better than the other and you're going to take the other because they fit better, I'm sorry, but on a rebuilding team that's entering year three, early stages of the rebuild, still lacks a star, that's not what I would do. And that's why I'm going to take the best player every day of the week, because this Washington Wizards team needs talent, and they need talent bad and quick. And that's why I think that they're going to take best player available, or at least should, in my mindset, take BPA. Now, that's some draft stuff. I wanted to kind of break up the show a little bit by talking about Bradley Beal and that reporting in the middle, and then we'll get to more Wizard stuff with the Kispert trade outlook. I actually have a fun trade idea with Orlando with that as well. And then we got some other stuff with Smart and Middleton later in the show. But the reporting, and in case you missed it, I'll fill you in right now about Bradley Beal. This was from Gambo. He's a Twitter, or I guess Suns insider. He does radio. I guess if I had a comp, it would be like Grant Paulson. I maybe that's not a good comp, but like a Grant Paulson for Phoenix. But Gambo's quite plugged in. He has a lot of sources. He breaks a lot of Phoenix Suns news. And he reported the other day that the Suns, quote, 100% don't want, end quote, Bradley Beal to return. Basically saying, like, from what I've heard from what he's heard from his sources, like, Phoenix doesn't want Beal back. And I think this was known, right? Because they try to trade him. They try to, like, bench him and, like, force him to, like, waive his no trade clause at the deadline. It was a really, really poorly handled situation, I think. One of the reasons they probably fired their coach and moved around the GM and all that stuff. But not a good situation. Really messed up the vibes in that locker room, apparently. And so, you know, Phoenix is sat there now, and they're going to probably trade Kevin Durant. That's the reports indicate before the draft. They still owe Bradley Beal 2 years, $110 million, all guaranteed, on top of the fact that he could say no to any trade that they make, even if it benefits Phoenix. If he doesn't want to go there, he can say no. So they're in a really tough spot. And it's really interesting because there was another report from The Athletic that said Phoenix would take back one second-round pick if a team was like, here, give me Bradley Beal. And I found that fascinating from Phoenix's perspective, because, like, this is a guy I think you'd have to attach at least one, maybe two first-round picks realistically to get off. Like, he is by far and away a top five worst contract in the league, right up there with a guy like, I think, Paul George and some other notably bad contracts. But his contract's awful. And it's not like he had a bad year. He was averaging like 17. He was nearly 50, 40, 90. He's solid, right? He's always been solid, but he's always never been worth that contract. More now than even when he signed that contract as a third option in Phoenix. And, they haven't won a playoff game his entire tenure there. They missed the playoffs completely, even the play-in completely last year because they lacked so much depth. It's just fun to kind of look at it from a Wizards perspective. And I posted this on Twitter. I'm recording this on June 8th. You guys will hear it and see it on June 9th and beyond. But June 8th is 2 years the date that the Wizards hired Will Dawkins. So I thought it was, you know, fitting to talk about Bradley Beal and that trade, looking back on it now and kind of analyzing it. It was June 18th, so 10 days from now, 2 years ago, 10 days from now, that the Wizards ended up making that move. So, you know, 10 days after Dawkins was hired, he shipped Beal out. And I think Michael Winger being there for a couple weeks before that helped. But if you need a reminder of where Washington is currently at, and what future assets they have from Beal. They still have pick swaps in 2026, 2028, and 2030. They have Phoenix's second-round pick this year, and then they also have it in 26, 27, 28, and 30. And then they obviously got Shamit and CP3, traded CP3 for Jordan Poole, who's been their best player arguably, definitely the past year, possibly the year before, even though it was a down year for him. Actually, Kuzma was probably better, but definitely their best player last year and best player entering next year. They got a 2027 second-round pick, so that's a total of seven second-round picks, and then a protected, I think top 20 protected, first-round pick in 2030 from Golden State in that deal. I mean, that's just an unbelievable return, and it's funny because Will Dawkins was getting clowned for it because they didn't get any first-round picks or unprotected first like they could have gotten a couple years ago. But if you're going to clown the Wizards for that, that's on Tommy Shepard, that's on Ted Leonsis for not pulling the plug on that as soon as they could, realizing, okay, this guy will never lead us past the first round or maybe even second round, but definitely nowhere near the finals. And I definitely shouldn't hold on to him if I'm getting a four unprotected first, four swaps haul like was being reported. But they didn't. And that's not Will Dawkins' fault. As you can see, 10 days after he took the job, Beal was gone. Shortly after, Porzingis is gone. And that trade wasn't great. And that's fine. But he had to move him or he was going to get nothing. So, you know, all things considered, I think Dawkins has been a pretty good job in year entering year three There's some guy, I posted this on Twitter. I'm not even going to mention this guy's name because he doesn't deserve to get any type of clout from it. But he commented under my post of Dawkins, you know, being hired 2 years ago, basically calling Wilt Dawkins a bum and saying, you know, he will give him praise when the Wizards start winning games. I think that's just everything wrong about, number one, fandom, and number two, about mindset when you're thinking about this team and rebuilds. Like, you could be against rebuilding, and that's one thing, but at the same time, like, Will Dawkins' intentions were to trade Beal, to trade Porzingis, to bottom out, lose a lot of games the last 2 years, maybe even next year, and then start to ascend while building through the draft and developing. The guy that commented clearly doesn't understand that, and that's fine. Some people are just slow. Some people don't understand it, and that's okay. But I just commented, it's the dumbest thing I've ever heard, and I think most Wizards fans backed me up under the comments as well. It's fine to say I'm not going to sing Dawkins' praises until I see real progress. That's fine. But calling him a bum is just kind of crossing the line. This guy's done a fantastic job the last couple of the years. The lottery luck hasn't been phenomenal, especially not this year. And I think that's why some people are more down on him and on the rebuild. But that's not always how it works. You got to deal with what you're play with what you're dealt. And I think the Wizards are still going to get someone good at six. And I think they have set up themselves up to at least compete in the future. If they hit on one of these picks. So again, I just wanted to touch on that real quick. I thought that was pretty ridiculous. But moving back to the Beal thing, I got a lot of comments and a lot of DMs asking me, should the Wizards consider it? Like, clearly Phoenix is shopping Beal to literally not even the highest bidder, the any bidder. Like, offer me anything to take his contract back, and I will probably give it to you. And so I tried to go into the trade machine and find one. And let me preface, I'm going to share my screen. I'm going to be brave. I'm going to be a brave soldier and share my screen because I know I'm going to get torn apart for this trade in the comments probably. I tried to find a deal that the Wizards could take Beal back in. And number one, I'll preface it with this. I don't think the Wizards should take him back. I think cap flexibility for a rebuilding team is important. And I don't think that taking on 2 years, $110 million guaranteed for Beal is smart for this team unless they're completely blown away. And that's the one thing I found is, there's no way Phoenix can blow you away. They don't have the assets to do so. They have a couple of first-round picks that are like the least favorable of a couple teams. They're going to be late ones. That doesn't mean anything to me. If I'm Washington, I need a good package, right? Or I would need a right place, right time trade where a guy like Derek Queen or Yegor Demon falls to like 13 or 14 in the lottery. And I'm like, you know what? I got to take this back, but I can get a couple assets in return. This is the deal that I found. And I'm going to say this. I wouldn't accept it. I wouldn't. I'm just playing around. And I was like, you know what? Let me divulge or indulge my listeners and viewers and share my screen. I know I'm going to get torn up in the comments, and that's okay. This is the trade. As you can see, the Spurs needed to be in it. But basically for Washington, right, this is where we're at with the move. They take on Bradley Beal's contract, which sucks. In order to do so, they move up four spots in the draft to number 14. They pick up an additional second-round pick at 52. They pick up 38 so they pick up another pick in this draft. And then they get a future two and a future one. And that one is the worst of the three teams listed, Utah, Cleveland, Minnesota. But at the same time, this is the very best that he can get. And I did this because I think the Spurs would accept this. I mean, moving back four spots, picking up an extra one, maybe, if they're looking to get more assets. They have a really small roster right now. If you're Phoenix, you're taking on Kispert, right? And you're taking on an expiring deal. But if you're Washington, I'll talk about Kispert in a second. He could be viewed as a negative asset. You could also swap out Kispert for Marcus Smart. Which I think more Wizards fans would like. But I know a lot of Wizards fans are down on Kispert after his season last year and I think would be, you know, perfectly content moving off of him, not just getting off that contract. But if you're Washington, right, I wanted to show Wizards fans it's pretty unfeasible or, you know, to please Washington with any type of trade package. I scoured the league, right? And, this is the package that I thought was the best. And if you're sat there right now listening to this, or you're watching it and you're saying, Greg, this is one of the worst things. Please take it off my screen right now. Then please take yourself out of the Wizards should trade for Bradley Beal camp, because it's not like it really gets too much better than this. Phoenix has has nothing. This is pretty much, you pretty much milked Phoenix for all its assets. It has maybe one other first round pick that you could add, but I don't think they would do that. Like, I don't think Phoenix would trade every single pick that they have to get off his deal. I think I'd rather eat it if I'm Phoenix. But at the same time, this is one of the better trades that I could find, and it's not good. So I wanted to be brave. I'm going to get torn apart. I know that. But I did just want to do that and kind of show everyone that it's, the grass isn't always greener. Like, bringing him back could be one thing. And it's another thing also, because, you know, he would start on this team. And yeah, you might be a little bit better and games might be more fun. But again, he's taking a starting spot from Bob Carrington. Like, are Wizards fans going to be happy about that? No, I doubt it. You know, they're already up in arms if they were going to draft a young guard, and maybe he takes minutes from some of the young guys. Imagine if they added Bradley Beal at 53 and then $57 million over the next 2 years. So again, I kind of wanted to show that as that was a trade that I thought was decent. And I looked at it again and I was like, why would the Wizards ever do that? Like, they don't have to. Why would you take on that contract? And you know, there's not many other trades that I think are possible. I don't think any contender really wants Beal. And you have also the thing of Beal has to accept the trade because he still has no trade clause. It's a whole thing. But I thought that'd be fun. Again, feel free to tear that trade apart in the comments. Or if you like it, feel free to let me know, because I thought it was a decent trade in terms of the bad trades. It's like, you know, 5-6 really bad things, but something's going to be the best of those bad things, right? And that's kind of what I viewed it. So if you actually like it, then sure, let me know. That'd be pretty cool. But I'm sure not a lot of Wizards fans want it. I think the majority of Wizards fans in that camp basically are against the Beal reunited or a Beal return to DC. But I thought that'd be a fun exercise. Moving on to the last couple of things in the show, the fourth thing on the agenda is Corey Kispert. And we talked about him in that last trade. I think, you know, Wizards fans are sort of moving into the, I don't even know how to describe their feelings on Kispert, but not the warmest of feelings for him. I mean, he has an extension that kicks in this year. It's 4 years, $54 million. And it's, you know, it's possible that you could view this guy as a negative asset if you're an opposing team. Like, you know, he's not a good defender. And I understand he's been trying and he's getting better IQ wise. Like, I don't think he's necessarily getting beat every single possession down the floor. I don't know if he's being hunted as much as he used to be hunted. But at the end of the game, like, if I need the defensive possession, I'm taking him out. Like, 10 times out of 10, I'm taking him out of the game because I feel like there's always a better defender on my bench. And if you're sat there saying that, then you got to give me something on offense, right? And he just doesn't. I mean, you look at his defensive rating. In 2023-24, 2 years ago, third worst defensive rating in the league. Then you look at this past year, 123.3 defensive rating in 24-25. That would rank dead last if you qualified. He played only 1,600 minutes. Qualifiers were 2,000 minutes on the stat that I found on StatMuse. But he was a pretty bad defender based on defensive rating and most defensive metrics. He doesn't necessarily match up too well athletically or speed-wise with a lot of the wings that he tends to guard. And the Wizards tried to not put him on, you know, the opposing team's top scorer, the second option. They try to hide him as best as they can, but sometimes you can't. And I feel like, you know, the Wizards are looking to build a team that has no weaknesses defensively. And it's hard to do in the league while also being good on offense. That's why they're looking for two-way guys. But, you know, if you told me Corey Kispert, you view him as a negative asset, I can't tell you you're wrong. And that's because if you're giving me nothing on the defensive end, you have to. To be playable, give me something on offense. And he just didn't last year. You know, didn't shoot the ball particularly well. You know, who wants a sharpshooter in a trade, right? Who isn't coming off a great shooting season, shot 36% from three. And that might be good for someone like Alex Saar, who's a 7-footer and plays good defense and does a lot of other things. But if you're bad at defense and you're not particularly good on offense and you're not shooting well, which is probably your best trait, it makes it a little difficult for me to, you know, raise your value or max out your value in trades. And he's a great cutter, probably the best on the team. He's a smart basketball player, and he's a good finisher. He's a lot better than people give him credit for, I will say that. But at the same time, right, like, he's not a good defender. And this team is clearly looking to be a really good defensive team. He could be a liability on that end. He didn't shoot the ball well last year. So you look at it and say, who are potential suitors, right? I think, you know, for those looking to trade Corey Kispert, and I'm not one of them, like, I don't think the Wizards should be shopping Corey Kispert. I value him. I think he's a great player. Not a great player. I think he's a solid role player. But I do fear that that contract could get annoying. You know, it's 4 more years, $54 million. That could get annoying when the Wizards are looking to, you know, make a big splash trade and they need cap flexibility, or they're looking to sign a free agent and they already extended a couple guys later down the line. Like, I could see that being an issue. But, you know, if I'm the Wizards, I'm not looking to shop them. I am open-minded, though. I am open-minded. If a team calls about Kispert, I'm like, yeah, go for it. What do you got? What is your offer? And so I think teams that could look to trade for him are contending teams that are looking for shooting. I mean, that kind of makes the most sense, that are already really sound defensively, but definitely need offense, need spacing. Orlando comes to mind. They shot the worst three-point percentage in the NBA last year, only one spot above, or I guess below Washington, who was 29th. But Orlando's offense was awful. Their defense, on the other hand, was terrific, especially in the playoffs. But their offense was bad. And they have a lot of good defenders. I think adding someone like Kispert, their defense wouldn't suffer too much, and their offense and their spacing would get a lot better. I think that would help them. The trade that I came up with, and it's so murky with a lot of these teams because salaries have to match, and I ideally I wanted to do this trade with a bunch of other players, and I just couldn't. But I'm going to switch it to it real quick and kind of show you. It would be Corey Kispert to the Orlando Magic. The Wizards would get Goga Batadze, 2 years, $8.2 million left on his deal. Gary Harris, expiring $7.5 million contract. And then the 25th pick in the 2025 NBA draft in return for Corey Kispert. Here's a couple notes on the trade. I already mentioned why it would make sense for Orlando. I mean, Batadze is a solid backup center, but, you know, it seemed like Orlando preferred to go with Mo Wagner before he tore his ACL. I would assume Wagner's back sometime in the beginning of next season. And I think Goga is someone that I could be expendable, especially if they're adding a good shooter like Kispert, or who could be a good shooter. I just talked about how he had a bad shooting season, so I'm not going to hype him up now. Gary Harris, I mean, he was 48 games. I believe he averaged like 3 points, or at least that's what I'm reading on ESPN. Again, an expiring contract, a tradable contract that, you know, could, you know, sit on Washington's bench, possibly a buyout candidate. And then the 25th pick is the real thing. Like, I don't think Goga and Gary Harris are enticing for the Wizards at all. I think they just make the money work. If anything, the Wizards are doing Orlando a favor by taking back that contract of Gary Harris. And I think the 25th pick is pretty enticing. Like, if you're Orlando, you have your young guys, you want to make a push, right? Why would you continue to draft? I mean, Jet Howard was a lottery pick of the Magic, and he doesn't see the floor. He doesn't play, realistically, any big major minutes. You got Caleb Houston over there. That was another first-round pick of the Magic, and he plays sparing minutes, but not that much. Like, they have young guys, and they have their draft picks, but adding another one all the way back at 25, like, cheap, right? But if I'm them, I'm compiling that to trade for a guy like Kispert. They also have 46, and again, 46 plus Harris and Batadze doesn't move the needle for me. Again, it's hard because I tried to, instead of throwing in Goga, throwing in like Jet Howard and then giving 46, and maybe the Wizards want to see what they got in Jet Howard, but the money doesn't work. Again, it's hard. Trading is hard, especially with the podcasting scene, because you have half the people that say it's a good trade and then half the people that say it sucks. So I'm completely prepared for either. But again, I think this is a possible trade that could work. And then you move on to another team that I think could move for him, and that's Houston. I'm not putting a trade up here because Fanspo was just too difficult. Like, Phoenix has a lot of contracts that maybe match. Like, a Dylan Brooks could work, but, like, why would they do that? Again, like, Jabari Smith, why would they do that? And then some other ones like Reed Shepard and Amen Thompson, those are their kind of the bigger end contracts in the middle that aren't, like, supermax big deals. And, again, why would they move on from any of those guys? So I think Orlando makes the most sense that I could see them doing a move, you know, on draft night, before draft night, something like that, if Washington is looking to move Kispert. But I did this to kind of show you that's the framework of a trade. You know, I think a late one from a contending team, maybe, you know, 2 seconds from another team that's looking to get Corey Kispert, that's possible. But I think that's probably the 25 or something like that is probably maxed out value for Kispert. And that's a deal that I would jump on. I would take that deal, honestly. I would try to find another guy that can do something better than Kispert. Shoot, similar or better than Kispert, but also be a plus defender. That's someone that I would look for. And it's important to note, and I'll end the Kispert talk on this. Corey Kispert was not drafted by Michael Winger or Will Dawkins. He was drafted by Tommy Shepard. And that's important to note because only Corey Kispert and Anthony Gill remain from those Tommy Shepard teams. It's a new regime. It's a new era. And I think Will Dawkins wouldn't think twice about it. He did extend Corey Kispert. That is true. He did extend him. But he also extended Denny Avdia. And then he had a breakout season and he traded Denny. You got Corey Kispert, who didn't have a great season. If he can trade him for a first, I think he would do it in a heartbeat. I would definitely do it. I'm curious, again, let me know in the comments now that we have them on YouTube, if you would do the trade that I just put out, or even if you wouldn't do that, what would a trade be that you would do? What do you think that they should trade Kispert? Because I certainly think that they should at least, you know, look into that. And the last part of the show is the future of two veterans, Marcus Smart and Chris Middleton. These are two guys that, you know, if I'm Washington, I just acquired them at the deadline. And here's the thing about those guys, right? Like it's important to note that you didn't acquire them for their services, realistically. Like, they still have a little bit left in the tank. You saw it last year. Like, Chris Middleton played well in certain games. Marcus Smart played well in certain games when he was healthy and not dealing with the finger injury he had. But again, they're injury-prone players, and they're older, and they're in their 30s. They're on really bad contracts. You made the Marcus Smart trade to get the 18th pick, or Memphis's first-round pick at the time. Not for Marcus Smart. That was the reason you got the pick, is to take on a bad contract. Again, you made the Kyle Kuzma trade with Chris Middleton to get a pick swap and to get A.J. Johnson, not to get Chris Middleton. I think the mentorship of both guys is another positive that people might not necessarily talk too much about, but it is important. I mean, you saw even the young guys, but also like Jordan Poole was getting coached up defensively by Marcus Smart in like a second game in D.C. Like, I think culture-wise, it'll be great to have them in the locker room, especially until the trade deadline, because I don't foresee them getting dealt before the draft. But I will say, a trade for either of them, if I'm looking at it, Marcus Smart would be the guy that I would you know, guess gets dealt. You know, Middleton, $34 million expiring contract is just really difficult to send to another team unless you're shipping off, you know, if you're giving me, you know, something or of that nature, in return, that makes sense. Sure. But, you know, if I'm a contending team, who's got $34 million sitting around, right? And you got a lot of these contending teams that are in the second apron, and then it gets murky with contracts, and it's tough to match deals. Whereas with Smart, $21 million, that's more feasible, especially at the deadline. And so I think if I'm looking at both of those expiring deals, Smart makes more sense as a guy that I would guess could get dealt. And at the same time, like, this isn't a Tyus Jones or Landry Shamet or Malcolm Brogdon situation where, yeah, you get these guys and you're looking to trade them. And if you don't, then I'm not too high on it. Maybe not Brogdon, because the whole point of that deal was Bub and the extra first. But at the same time, like, I'm okay with those deals that were made and what the Wizards got out of them. If they get anything for either Smart or Middleton, then I think it's a cherry on top, right? I think that more so states my point clearly is, you know, I'm content with those deals. They weren't made for those guys specifically. And if you can, you know, off of those trades, trade the pieces that you got for additional assets, even if it's 2-3 second round picks and some expiring salary in return, I'm okay with that because it continues to add to your stockpile of picks, and you're getting a half year, pretty much a full year at that point, mentorship with two really great vets for some of the young guys. I mean, you got a guy like Bob Carrington, who was pretty lethal in the mid-range for a rookie, and you got a guy like Chris Middleton, one of the best mid-range players of the last decade, who Bub could learn from. You got a really young, good defensive team, a lot of good players like Keyshawn and Bilal, that you want to be good on that end. Who better to learn from than a reigning defensive player of the year and one of the best defenders of the decade, especially at the guard position, and Marcus Smart? Like, that is kind of why I'm sat here and saying, you know, I've got a lot of questions on, Greg, do you think that they could move off of Middleton or Smart? Number one, I don't. And number two, if I did, I think it'd be Smart more than Middleton. And number three, if they didn't, I wouldn't be too upset. I think the mentorship that they could give is invaluable. And I think that anything more than that, if you get other assets at the deadline, is important. Now, I honestly value that mentorship so much on a young team that I wouldn't want to deal them before the draft. Like, I don't think there will be a deal in place, and I think they need to up their value. But I'm not even concerned about them even taking minutes from some of the young guys. I think it'll be great. You saw it with Detroit, right? And I'm not saying it's going to be a turnaround like that, but playing younger guys, playing with a bunch of other younger guys doesn't necessarily bode well all the time. You saw it last year with the Wizards. Like, when they would throw out these really young lineups, it would be fun. And Wizards fans would be excited. But when they played with veterans like Valanciunas, and then Middleton and Smart would come, you know, at the deadline, they played better as a team. I mean, they went to Detroit and into Denver and beat both of those teams when they were pretty healthy. You know, it's, they played well with the vets, and the younger guys play well. They develop better when they play with better teammates and play with these veterans that are teaching them stuff. So I'm completely fine with them taking some minutes until February to build that value and to help everyone around them learn, grow, and get better. That's kind of what I think the value of them is. And if they can get anything for them, sure. I think it's going to be difficult, right? You know, bloated salaries, that, as you saw, contending teams had to attach stuff to get off. And the Bucks did, because they got Kuzma back, but that didn't bode well for them either. But especially with Smart, right? They attached all that of another first-round pick to get off of him. And, you know, I don't know what the Wizards are realistically going to do with that unless they can rebuild his value immensely. But that's kind of my stance on that. I think it'd be pretty difficult to trade either of them. That completes the agenda you see on the screen. That's all five things that I want to talk about today. I was going to do a mock trade podcast, but I felt like this was a better way of introducing some trades, at least to the show, instead of just forcing, you know, a couple of deals. And so that's kind of the direction I went. And it's also been a lot of draft heavy content, and I didn't want to just continue to pile on speculation about what the Wizards do at 6:18:40 and just continuing to talk about prospects. I think this will be a nice little switch up pod. Talk about some offseason storylines, some stuff with, you know, an old face and Beal. But we should be back. I'm trying to add another guest on, another draft analyst, to talk about more draft stuff, you know, later this week as we ramp up. I mean, the draft's 3 weeks away, honestly, less than that. It's 2.5 weeks away by the time I'm recording this. So get ready. It's June 25th and 6th. It's going to be fun. It's going to be a cool event for the Wizards. They currently have 3 picks, could add more, like we talked about in this pod, based on trade back and that speculation. So that's going to ramp up. You're going to see some pre-draft workout stuff as well. I would touch on that here, but like, they worked out Jeremiah Fears reportedly. And apart from that, no other top 30 prospect. They worked out LeBaron Fylon, but he went back to Alabama. So when I hear more about that, or I guess when other reports come out, I'll definitely talk about it on the pod. But for those of you curious about pre-draft workouts, I've seen nothing. The Wizards are notoriously, under this regime, very tight-knit with that type of stuff. So I wouldn't be surprised if it's pretty quiet on that front until realistically the end. I mean, it's different because, like, Portland, which I like what they do, they, like, tweet everything out. Like, here's our pre-draft workout, here's media availability, here's YouTube clips. And they do that. And that's great for the fans, but maybe not necessarily for the organization in terms of being quiet and reserved. The Wizards are complete opposite. They don't tell anybody anything, which isn't great for people like me in the media, who have podcasts and want to talk about it. But it's maybe good for them because they keep everything and all their intel internal, which doesn't give teams too much of a tip on the prospects they're bringing in and looking at and all that stuff. But I do promise, for those asking, I will let you know when I hear more. I just don't know anything because I'm not in these workouts. And the Wizards keep it tight-knit. But that's going to do it for this episode. Thank you guys for listening. Thank you for the support on YouTube. It's been great. Thank you for commenting and keeping me engaged in the comments with your feedback. It's appreciated. Let me know what you think about the setup with the sharing the screen, if you guys like that. Let me know what you think about the cool feature that I have. It's, I guess, a banner or a heading. I don't know what you call it, but whatever's on the screen, the overlay maybe. If you guys like that or any tweaks for that. You know, I'm young, but I'm not great with technology. I'm just learning this stuff. And shout out to my guy, Maxime, who's been helping me with all that stuff. Again, that's going to do it for this episode. Thank you guys, as always, for tuning in. I'll be back for another episode, hopefully sometime this week, ideally Wednesday or Thursday. So look out for that. Thanks for listening, as always. Go Wiz.